And welcome back to the 188th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. As always, Grandpa Dan, your host. There's never another host for the Parish of the Patriots. We don't even do guest hosts. If I'm down and out and I can't do a show, you just don't get a show. We don't have guest hosts. There's only one. I'm glad you're here. It's always good to sit down. Welcome the congregation back, whether you're a repeat member or it's your first time stopping in. If it is your first time stopping in, beware. We do have a Christian specific segment. That's usually roughly around the middle part of the show. That's what I aim for. Doesn't always work that way, but that's what we shoot for. Encourage you to stick around for it. I think you'll get something out of it. People tell me they get something out of it. We always like to get out of the way. Look, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. We don't hide any content. No paywall. There's no special other spot you go to listen to. So, you get everything. Everything there is. I give it all to you for free. I do ask that you voluntarily support the show if you want to be a part of that. Just scroll down to the bottom of the description page here at Radio Albion. For this page and or for this show, and you'll see we've got snail mail. Doesn't get simpler than that. Got Bitcoin, got Monero, got email address for your notes down there. And if you've got a different cryptocurrency, drop me a note. Trust me, I'm sure I can get you a address for that. So we're going to do the listener supporter mailbag. It's really, really short this week. GPD, here's something for the offering plate. That's from Mr. T. Appreciate it, Mr. T. That sums up our listener supporter mailbag. That is the listener supporter mailbag. Well, look, it's not as bad as it sounds, because you're like, man, you only got one guy put something in the plate. That's not true, because we do have some that drop something in the plate and they don't know notes. So, you know, it's not as bad as it seems. So I do appreciate any and all support. So yeah, here we are. Another week has gone by. More, it's just the fun never stops, does it? So you have this whole thing. I realized, you know, you do realize these shows are obviously, they're not live. They're pre-recorded, and it's nice because, like, I can pause and go get coffee, pause or whatever. Sometimes I pause and I make noise because I hit the resume recording button a little too soon. So we try to maintain our professionalism. Sometimes that falls off. Lots of happenings, of course. It just, things are continuing to escalate. The U.S. went and blew up Russia's pipelines. Are we allowed to say that? We might get thrown into Guantanamo Bay for pointing out that the U.S. did blew up the pipelines. Everybody knows. It's so funny to me. They sit around like, and they act like they can do this whole legalese, like, you know, non-denial denials, you know, where you can't technical plausible deniability. And like, that's going to just fly forever. Everybody on the face of the planet knows that the U.S. blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. Everybody knows. And I've seen them floating out these stories. Trying to claim to insinuate that Russia blew up their own pipeline. Which is like the most retarded narrative I've ever heard. Well, no, that's probably not true. Because it's a new day tomorrow. There will probably be a more retarded narrative tomorrow. But it is a retarded narrative. I saw in the Daily Mail, of all places, I saw several articles where they float these trial balloons out. These theories. Here's some guy I've never heard of who's got a whole thing out to explain why it is Russia might would blow up their own pipelines when they could just simply turn the valve off and not send any gas. And it's funny because usually a lot of these articles, they have their comment farms, probably most of them is either Israel or Ukraine, you know, and they have their comment farms all ginned up. They like give them a heads up. I notice on news articles on Daily Mail, you know, anywhere where they have comments, Yahoo has started allowing comments again. And you can tell the articles where they have their comment farms all lined up. They gave them a heads up and they're on board. So they know when this article drops to get in there and flood the comments to try to make people think this is what other people think. It's real obvious when they do this and when they fail to do this, because you'll have an article and you're like, well, you know, that's obviously bullshit. And you go to the comments and everybody on board is like, yes, this is the greatest truth ever. Obviously, this is true. And they're almost like copy paste comments. And you're thinking to yourself, you know, your first reaction is, my gosh, there's no hope for humanity. People are this freaking stupid. But you see, if you read enough articles and you read enough comments and you look, you start seeing the pattern and you understand they have comment farms. And when they drop an article, if they want to make sure to reinforce to make people think that, yes, everybody agrees with this, they'll drop the note to the comment farms. Now, I saw several of these articles in the Daily Mail insinuating, trying to imply and convince people that Russia blew up their own pipelines. Well, they obviously did either the comment farms were overworked because they were working on other stories. They didn't have time to get to this, or somebody dropped the ball and forgot to give a heads up because they didn't have the comment farms there. And you go through at the bottom and virtually all of the comments are like, this is stupid. Everyone knows the U.S. did this. I mean, like everybody knows the U.S. did this. And like, nobody's fooled. Nobody's buying this whole Russia blew up their own. Russia blew up their own pipelines. It is stupid. We all know the U.S. did it. Now, the reason, Anthony Blinken came out and he says, this was in nobody's interest. Well, that's obviously a lie. Imagine that, a lie. It's obviously a lie on his face. To say, this was in nobody's interest. Well, if it was in nobody's interest, if that was the truth, then nobody would have done it. Obviously, it was in somebody's interest because somebody blew the damn things up, right? This was in nobody's interest to do that. Well, obviously it was, and we all know whose interest it is. Here's the thing. I've been saying for a while. That they're going to be slipped into a bunk. They're going to be European. Let me tell you, they're going to be European governments in a lot of trouble this winter. There are going to be European governments failing and falling this winter. We've talked about that a lot. I've talked about it a lot on this show. We've discussed this a lot on the show, how I don't see any way around that. You're going to have pitchforks and torches and car burnings, you know, depending on how bad the winter is. And how quickly they run out of storage in their gas storage. Personally, because of the lulls, I'm kind of hoping for a severe winter. But it's just kind of like how I was hoping Liz Truss would become Prime Minister of Britain. Just because it's funny. It's funny because I'm not having to deal with it personally. No, I have to deal with my own. I'm in the U.S. Trust me. I'm in the eye of the clown. It's like the eye of the hurricane. We're in the eye of the clown because I'm here. I'm here in the U.S. Look, this whole nonsensical thing of making this has really highlighted how Western European nations have no independence. They're all vassal states. I mean, this is really, you can pretend like Germany is a sovereign nation, but now it's obviously not. When you have nations just for no reason doing things that are completely counter to their own national interest. I mean, there is no way to frame this. You got nations like, you got Germany. I'm just going to pick on Germany. You got a nation like Germany, which is basically supporting the EU. The EU is, well, it's obviously now a vassal state of the U.S., but as far as holding it together, the EU, it was Germany because they were the only ones making any money. All the rest of them are like welfare recipients. And you got Germany making these decisions that are so obviously against their own interests. They can't even say why they're doing it. They have to throw out a bunch of gibberish. Like, we're doing this, we're going to destroy our own economy and really anger our own people and probably collapse our own government because of the democracy and our values of who we are in the Ukraine. It doesn't make any sense. There's no reason. This is really highlighted. There are no independent. There's no point. I don't know. I mean, I know I will, but part of me thinks I should just stop. I should just not bother doing any stories that talk about Liz Truss or Macron or anybody else in Europe making some statements because they're vassal states. All they're doing is what the U.S. tells them to. That has become plain and simple. But here's the thing. Here's the danger. Like I said before, and I've said this numerous times, depending on how bad it gets, I mean, this winter, they're telling people quit showering and freeze for the democracy of who we are in the Ukraine. Look, you're going to wind up with cities burning, depending on how bad it gets. Now, there was always the possibility that one of these puppet governments might wake up one day and look out the window of the palace, the presidential palace, and see the peasants out there with their pitchforks and torches and lighting cars on fire, and the police and military starting to run away and going, hey, wait a minute. This might not be the best thing ever. I might should go ahead and maybe put an end to this. And they might actually, there was always the potential that they might find their cojones somewhere and say, yeah, no, sorry, U.S., we're not doing this anymore. I'm not going to get drug out by the peasants and hung on a light pole for you. And they might go out and say, look, we're going to strike a deal with Russia. We're dropping all these sanctions. We're done with all this. We don't care about the damn Ukraine. Never really cared about them. And turn the gas back on for the sake of all that's good and holy. Turn the gas back on, please. Appease these peasants. There was always the danger that they were going to do that. I mean, sure, right now things are warm. And the puppet states are going to go along and talk about the democracy of who we are in the Ukraine and tell people you're going to freeze and not be able to keep your lights turned on because it's a part of our values of who we are. But when it comes down to looking out the window and the peasants are fixing to burn down the palace with you in it, that's a whole nother story. There was always a potential that they would back up off of this. But you see what they do now. They blew up these pipelines. That option isn't on the table anymore. Option's not on the table anymore. Now, they basically just locked them into a suicide pact. They got them locked in the room, and they just lit off the charcoal briquette. It's just like a Korean drama. They locked themselves in the car and rolled up the windows. You know, the entire European Union now is locked in the car with the windows up, and they got the charcoal briquette. That's a suicide method in Korea. People get in the car and light this charcoal brick. And anyway, they suicide pacted these European nations because now they can't. Now they can't turn the gas back on because they done blew up the pipelines. There's nobody. This is to nobody's benefit. Obviously, it's a lie. Somebody's benefit, and it ain't hard to figure out who's. But they're saying now that we're going to do an investigation. The very people that blew the shit up are now going to do an investigation to find out who done it. Well, I wonder how that's going to turn. This is like when the police do an investigation on themselves. They talk about that. Or like, you know, you have one of these incidents like when in Iraq, you know, and it's like, hey, the military blew up a bunch of civilians and these people are complaining about it. But, hey, that's not a part of our values of who we are. We're going to investigate. Who's going to do the investigation? The military. I wonder how the investigation's going to come out. The people that blew up the damn pipes are going to investigate and get to the bottom to find out who did it. This is why they're having to float these stupid stories, you know, trying to say, hey, this might be some of the reasons why Russia might would have blown up their own pipeline, because they're trying to at least set the seed in people's mind that this might somehow be somewhat believable. If you really, really stretch your imagination, this might become believable. The people that blew up the pipe, I wonder what they're going to find. Somehow they're going to have to create a story of why Russia would have done this. And then they're going to have to try to sell it to people. So they'll put the story out. They get the comment farms on board. Make sure everybody's lined up. Say, oh my gosh. This is just... Russia had been pretty chill with the whole thing. I would have thought they'd have been pissed. But I guess they were kind of like, you know, well, you know, I mean, really, their reaction was basically looking over at Europe, looking over at Germany, and being like, y'all the ones need to be pissed. You know, we're still selling our gas to China and India, and we just go the other direction. Y'all are the ones that have been just locked in the door. I thought of this the other day. They just welded the cockpit shut. They just turned the entirety of the European Union. They just turned Germany into kamikazes for the Ukraine. That's what they have done. They put them in the airplane. They said, this is your mission. And they shut the cockpit. And Germany's sitting in the zero thinking, and they look and they're like, hey, tapping on the glass of the cockpit. ain't got enough gas to do this mission and come back. And then they see sparks and they're welding the cockpit shut. Banzai, brother. They just turned Western, they just turned Germany into kamikazes for the Ukraine, for the U.S. Yeah, they've welded the cockpit shut now. Ain't no other way to go but forward. Go crash your entire nation into Russia for the sake of the Ukraine. So I guess to a certain extent it makes sense that Russia's been pretty chill about it. You know, they're just kind of like looking at Germany, shaking their head like, y'all all looking at me like we're supposed to be mad. And you know, we ain't real happy about this, but y'all the ones going to suffer. Y'all are going to suffer way more than we're going to suffer. I don't know. You know, it's quite the thing. We had Russia, they held their voting on these areas from the eastern Ukraine. These areas, the occupied areas and these areas, you know, to join Mother Russia, you know, to become Russia. And you know, most of these people are Russian. You know, I mean, they are. They're acting like, oh, these people, the U.S., they're going around trying to say, oh, this is like a sham deal. Like, they're forcing these people. Imagine you live in somewhere and the Ukraine is dropping bombs on you every day, killing your damn people, telling you you can't speak your own language. You got to do gay anal and turn your kids into trannies. And then you get the opportunity to vote to not do that and join Russia, and maybe they'll have to quit bombing you, and you don't have to do man-on-man fisting with a seven-year-old or whatever the hell that they're promoting. And they go out and say, oh, well, these people didn't really want to. What are they saying? They say, this is a sham referendum. These people didn't really want it. They were being coerced and forced. I'm pretty sure you got to be forced to vote to, you know, stop being bombed, to stop being told you can't speak your own language, you got to speak this other language. I'm pretty sure most people, it's not really shocking that most people would vote, you know, to not be a part of the people that are trying to kill you. They're trying to wipe you off the face of the map. So they had this vote, and unsurprisingly, you know, they voted to become part of Russia. I don't know what's going to become of it because, you know, Russia's saying, well, this makes them a literal part of Russian territory, and we're going to escalate. And, of course, the U.S. and its puppets are dancing around going, we just won't recognize it. You know, like they are the arbitrators of reality. We will never recognize these folks. Well, it doesn't matter if you do because Russia's already saying they do. So if you insist on bombing them and they decide to go all out and start blowing your shit up, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't just sit there and it's just like I have this mindset that, you know, they're totally beating Russia and China on social media and that somehow counts. You know, they can play these legalese word games and, you know, because they can make them, you know, write article after article, run news story after news story, making Russia look bad. By the way, what happened to the latest atrocity Russia committed? Remember the mass graves? We were hearing about mass graves. That's already gone. Maybe it's too many of us noticed that in a lot of footage, there were all these headstones. They were just walking through a cemetery talking about mass graves. They act like we're making Russia look really bad in the media. That means we're winning. Boy, howdy. We're really winning the PR campaign against Russia. I don't know. You know, because these people live in a reality that, or I'm sorry, these people live detached from reality. They live in a bubble. That's what I was trying to say. They live in a bubble. They're detached from reality. And they seem to really think, well, we just refuse to recognize it. So it won't count. You see, you can't say that we're attacking Russian territory. You can't say we're attacking Russian territory because we already told you we don't recognize the vote. Don't you understand the legal ramifications of this, Mr. Putin? Doesn't matter. They act like this. Well, because no, it doesn't count. You know, it's like a little kid, like making up the rules as they go. That is the rules-based order, by the way. It's this childish view that we make up the rules as we go. It's like playing tag, and you get tagged, and the kid's like, no, wait. That doesn't count because, you see, the rule is if I'm 3 feet from that tree, you can't tag me. Wait, what? I didn't hear about this rule before. Yeah, that's the rule. It's a rules-based order of who we are. I don't know where it's going, but if you haven't read, and I read these things, if you haven't yet, I do encourage you to go read the entirety of Putin's speech he gave after signing on, you know, to annexing these, to bringing these territories back home to Mother Russia. I do encourage you to read the entirety of the speech because it's good. It's really, really good. It's like the anti-clown world speech. He even talks about child trannies. He literally calls the U.S. and the West Satanist. He points out that Europe has no sovereignty. He points out, he mocks and ridicules like the German and French leaders for having no actual independence, for just how do they wake up in the morning and look at themselves with no kind of way to like determine their own future. They just do what they're told. They're just employees. He calls it, and he literally says the U.S. is satanic. He calls it, it's like a religion in reverse. It's satanic. Really, like I say, we're not going to go through it here. But if you haven't, go read the whole thing in its entirety. Don't just settle for the, you know, little snippets the U.S. media is going to put out. Go and read the thing in entirety. It's a brilliant speech. I think the speech can largely be viewed as he is another step to where he's preparing the people with the mindset of a full-on out-and-out war, which is not surprising. It's not real encouraging. But it's not surprising. I do think he's mentally preparing his people. And people do. They act like you just go off and just launch off into a full war just overnight. You can just do this. You see people, they're impatient. Why didn't Russia do this? Well, Russia ought to just wipe them off the face. Look, that ain't the way it works. You got to have the people on board. I've said this before. I hate using sports analogies, but if you're an NFL coach and you got the greatest plan in the world that's going to bring your team with the talent you got to the Super Bowl, if the team doesn't believe in your plan, it ain't going nowhere because they ain't going to get behind. They ain't going to execute the plan. They're going to do what they're supposed to. They got to buy into the plan. War is no different. You've got to mentally prepare the people. You got to get them on board. This war is worth the fight because fill in the blanks. Now, you look at this speech Putin gave where he's obviously, this is a step preparing the people for this. He says in his speech, basically, he says Russia is a Christian nation and these people we're opposing are Satanists, which isn't true. Which is not true. I get that spit out in a minute. It's the truth. It's not propaganda. I mean, it is propaganda, but it's propaganda based in the truth. When he says, look, we are a Christian nation. Well, you know, yes. But when he says the U.S. and the West is satanic, that is just full on truth. He's lining up. Look, this is a holy war. We're fixing to embark on a holy war against Satan himself. And again, he's not wrong. He points out that the U.S. wants to destroy the country. He's getting the people in the mindset of, look, our backs are against the wall here. And again, he's right. I'm not saying it isn't propaganda. It is. But it's propaganda can be based in truth. We lose sight of that because all of our propaganda from the U.S. and in the West is based on bullshit. But bullshit and lies. But propaganda, and the best propaganda, is based on truth. That's the most effective propaganda because you don't have to be at home because it registers with the people because they look around and says, yeah, this lines up with the world around me. I believe it. It's the truth. But he is. He's mentally preparing his people. I think this speech gives us the understanding that Russia understands that this is basically going to be a full-on war with the West. And they're mentally prepared. And again, people get impatient, but you know, life isn't a video game. If you're going to take your nation into a major war, you got to mentally prepare. You got to get your people prepared. You got to get them on board that it's worth doing. You do. You've got to have that. Otherwise you've lost the war before you even started it. Now, whether you think the people of Russia are going to get on board or not, I don't know. I don't live there. I don't know what, you know, you can't believe anything in the U.S. media. I will tell you this notion that you're going to get the people in the U.S. on board with a world war with Russia for the sake of gay anal in the Ukraine, you ain't going to get, the people aren't on board with that. I mean, whether you agree or disagree, Putin is at least getting his people, trying to get his people mentally prepared for the task that's coming. And he obviously sees it coming. The U.S. is not doing that. The U.S., if it wasn't being run by people that are completely incompetent, would be doing the same thing. They would be preparing their people. Of course, how do they do that? They can't frame it, because it always comes down to framing it as we're the force of good and we're fixing to have to gird our loins to fight against the forces of evil. You know, Putin can do that. How do they do that in the U.S.? All they can do is, the only way they can try to frame that is how they've been doing it, which is the democracy and the values of who we are in a rules-based order. More gay anal or whatever the hell. How are you going to get people on board? How do you live in a absolute clown world society, which we do? How do you live in a society where people are being, you know, half the population now has been demonized by the president of the United, the alleged president of the United States. Half the people have been demonized and called domestic terrorists. Parents who go to their school boards and say, look, we don't want books for our fourth graders talking about how to give oral sex to adult men. We're against that. And they get a letter written to the Department of Homeland Security saying, y'all need to do something about these domestic terrorists. They're dangerous. They don't want their kids learning how to give a proper blowjob to a grown man. How do you frame a fight against anybody as we're the force of good against the force of evil? We are this thing that we are in is the force of evil. I mean, that is observable reality. They can deny truth all they want. They can put people in jail all they want. It won't change the reality. And people will sit there and put their head down and give the proper responses so that they don't get swooped on or they don't lose their jobs or they don't get hassled. But you know what? In their hearts, they still know what the truth is. You're not going to get the people behind a major war effort for vague things like democracy, value of who we are in a rules-based order, that we never be told, we're never told exactly what the rules are. You just can't. You got to have something to where the people really rally around it. What are they going to rally people around in the U.S.? But I don't, like I say, I don't see, I mean, it's plain and obvious to see that Putin is getting his people mentally prepared for, you know, for a major war. He's getting them prepared so that it doesn't shock the populace, so it doesn't come as a surprise, so that they see themselves as a force of good fighting the forces of evil. The U.S. isn't preparing. They're just doubling down on more gibberish. They're just doubling down on acting like they can play these wizard word games, and somehow Russia can't do anything because they're making them look bad on Twitter. We're totally owning Putin on Twitter. We've got this, look, you can't go into an all-out war here because, look, we've got this technicality, legalese wording that we're doing here where you can't technically say we're doing that. None of that shit matters when they drop a bomb on your house. They act like they can just shape reality with their wizard words. I don't know. They're not. I don't know if it's just because they're just so detached from reality, or if the fact of the matter is there is nothing they can do to rally the populace around this idea of a war. There's nothing they got. Like I say, it's pretty hard. You know, we need more child trannies in the Ukraine, and we're going to have to, Russia's in the way of more worldwide gay anal. That, you know, pretty hard to rally anyone around that. Of course, the wild card as this continues to spiral out of control is, what's China going to do? What's China? And I find it, of course, curious. China's got to know that if Russia loses this conflict, they're next. If the West, if the U.S. gets their way and destroys Russia and breaks it apart and turns it into Middle East 2.0, then China stands alone. China stands alone, and they're going to be in a weaker position. So what does China do? Does China open a second front? Does China join in? I do see some indications of that happening. I don't know. We don't know how. Nobody knows how all this plays out. But we can look at the tea leaves and see where it's all heading. Like I say, I really encourage you to go find the translation of the entire speech and read the entire thing. It's a great speech. But like I say, it's obviously, too, this is another step where he's mentally preparing the people for a protracted, real-time conflict, real-time war with the U.S. Because when you talk about all these things, the West, NATO, the EU, look, you're talking the U.S. You take the U.S. out of the equation, none of those other entities even exist. And of course, we got to get into our Christian specifics there, but to wrap it up there, it's just amazing that you see these clueless countries, which you have the country with the most historical precedent for being clueless, namely Poland, running around like shit-talking Russia. Like, oh, yeah, they're talking all this big shit. They're yapping all this big shit because they're like, yeah, you know, y'all can't do nothing because we're NATO, right? Right? And it's like... It's very likely that the U.S. ain't going to do nothing, Poland. You should have like some historical memory of this deja vu. You've got these security guarantees. They're going to come to your rescue for sure this time. I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out. Things continue to spiral down, escalate, and we're just going to continue to seek the truth. We're going to talk about these things as long as we can. If it does turn into an open conflict, we get to the point of open conflict and an out-and-out war, probably not going to be able to talk about them without being thrown in jail. That's a reality. People like us are sitting here and speaking the truth. And already the truth is under all of this pressure here in the empire of lies. But they're still lying. We can still talk about it like we are right now. But if we get into an open conflict, then what? Then they're going to say you're aiding and supporting the enemy. Yeah. I don't know, sedition and whatever the hell they come up with because you're pointing out the truth. It's sad because this doesn't need to happen. You know, I mean, it's totally unnecessary. But here we go. Or at least that's where we're headed. We're going to get on here and get into the Christian specific segment. Like I say, if you're new around here, don't just turn it off. I encourage you to give it a try. It might be something different. You might get something out of it. If not, hey, you've been warned. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, as it were, here at the Parish of the Patriots. As we get started this week, I just had a random thought of it. It just popped into my head just a few minutes ago. And I'm thinking, you know, those who say that Christianity is the reason, is the cause for clown world, it's right on tier with Russia blew up their own pipelines. Makes about as much sense. No, but it's really funny because in so doing, for those who claim right now, granted, I'm not saying the MCC is not complacent and even a part of the ongoing destruction, but to say Christianity with a blanket statement is the cause of degenerate clown world around us is to, on the flip side of that, say that Satan's not responsible at all. To say that, you know, oh, Satan's off the hook. The real problem is the truth. The real problem is Christianity, which of course is absurd in and of itself. I thought for our discussion this week, we're going to look at all three epistles of John. The first, second, and third book of John. No, don't stop listening now. We're not going to sit here and read all three. Don't worry. But I recently was going through these, and it's funny because there's a theme here, and you know, this overriding theme in John's writings here is the theme of love. In the first book, he says repeatedly, he says, you know, he admonishes the brethren to love one another. And of course, we know that our current modern definition of love is all twisted and screwed up. And people tend to try to put this modern definition of love, which is closer to like a lust or empty, lust at worst. Let me put it this way. Lust at worst, empty emotionalism at best. And it's far removed from the true definition of the meaning of the word. Especially as applied in those times. And of course, obviously, this is once again one of those things we talk about quite a bit here. I just want to hit some of these highlights from the first book of John. Let's look at chapter 2 first. We're going to look at chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. He says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away in the lust thereof. And he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Love not the world, love not these temporary things. Now, he's not saying you're not going to have these things going on. He's not saying you're not going to have these things going around, because obviously we are in the world. It's a matter of loving. In other words, it's a matter of embracing them. It's a matter of making them a part of who you are. It's a matter of making them a part of your life. He's saying that's not what, you know, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. You're going to have these things. You're going to be dealing. You are in the world, but you're not to be of the world. You're not supposed to love. You're not supposed to love these things. Now, you know, that means you're not supposed to embrace them. You're supposed to try your best not to be doing those things. These are things to be shunned. You're supposed to be turning away and trying your best to turn away from those things and always be reaching higher, reaching to be closer to God. Let's go ahead and jump to the next. We're going to be looking, and we're staying in 1 John for now. Chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear that we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure. Whosoever committeth sin transgresseth also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. I like this set of verses here because it so much highlights love as action. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us. The Lord doesn't have an empty emotionalism definition of love. He bestowed love upon us that we should be called the sons of God. He took action through Jesus Christ that we could be called, that we might be as sons of God. And also we're given great hope here in these verses because it says we will become as him. When we finally move from this realm, we'll finally see him as he is. Not with this veil of that is put up with this temporal realm that we reside. It's like we're out of, I'm always struggling to put into words the way I see the difference between eternity and time, the temporal realm. And one of the ways I think of it is we're out of phase. It's not that it's way off somewhere separate. It's all around us. The kingdom of God is all around us. We're just out of phase. We're out of sync with it. So we don't see it and we don't understand it. We don't see him as he is because we're out of phase. We're in time. But when we die, when we're birthed again into the eternal realm, then we'll get in phase. We'll be in phase with the eternal realm, and then we'll see clearly. Then we're going to understand because we're going to be able to see. We're going to be able to see and understand what is around us. But we're not going like way off somewhere. We're here. It's right around us. We're immersed in eternity. We're just simply out of phase. That's the way I see it. And like I said, I've put it several different ways. I've tried to view this, but you know, that's one of the ways I think is better to look at it. And finally, I want to look at chapter 4, verses 20 through 21. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he's a liar. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he hath seen, how can he love God, whom he hath not seen? And this commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God loveth his brother also. Now understand, again, what we're kind of highlighting here, highlight with this sort of topic a lot, is we're not talking about empty emotionalism. And I always think it's wrong. I don't, because we define love so often as an emotion, as a feel, as a feeling of affection. God never, you know, the truth does not guide us to deceive ourselves, to lie to ourselves. In other words, look, you make, the best way I can put this is, let's say you're going to a regular church. You're going to a, you got a regular IRL congregation that you go and attend to. And afterwards you have get togethers and, you know, fellowship and, you know, I don't know, y'all eat sup, you eat dinner. Yeah. That's right. Dinner is lunchtime. That is the proper thing. You Yankees don't know that. You Yankees don't know that. But dinner is lunchtime. Supper is what you eat in the evening. Dinner is not in the evening. So y'all eat after church. Y'all like, what does that have to do with anything? It's an important, it's important just because I say it's important. You have dinner after church services and you mingle with one another. Now look, there might be somebody, for whatever reason, because we all have different personalities, you know, we all have different ways of thinking. And there might, let's say there's somebody that's a member of your congregation that you know, you're going to wind up talking to, whatever. And you might just, for whatever reason or another, you don't like that guy. You don't like that guy. And maybe he is. Maybe he's a real asshole. I don't know. But for whatever reason, you don't like that guy. May not have anything. Y'all know what I'm talking about. It may not have anything to do with, you know, if someone said, why don't you like him? You might not even be able to put it into words. You can't say, well, he did this to me, or he did that to me, or he talked smack about me behind my back. You might not be able to say any of those things. It's just a personality clash. Nothing more. It's not that there's really anything wrong with that guy. It's just for whatever reason, because of your type of personality and his type of personality, you may be too much alike. But whatever the case may be, you may not like that guy. Now, people, when they read things like, say, the first book of John, and they're talking about where he's expounding again and again and again on love your brother, love your brethren. You got to love your brother. If you say you love God, you don't love your brother, then you're a liar. You don't have the love of God in you. Now, a lot of people will see this as Christian believers, and they, once again, they try to apply our modern definition of love to this, and they think that God is telling them to fake it. Fake it till you make it. Act like you really like this guy. Tell yourself, oh yeah, tell everybody, I love him, and you're grinding your teeth, because you don't. You don't like that guy. God is never going to guide you to lie to yourself or others. He's the truth. When it says there's no guile found in his mouth, it means there was no deception. There's no lie. Look, you don't have to have a feeling of affection. So how do you love this person? How do you love this person? We're getting down to brass tacks here. How do you love this person in your life that hasn't done anything to you, just for whatever reason, you don't like them? But how do you love that person? How do you love that person? Well, let me ask you this. Do you go around at your church? We're going to stick with our example of dinner time fellowship at the IRL church and dealing with these social interactions. Do you go around when he's not around and spread gossip about him? Do you go around and tell everybody, yeah, you know what I heard about that guy? Do you make up lies? You know, do you spread rumors that maybe you've heard from other people about that guy because you don't like him? See, that is not acting in love. See, the opposite of that. If you treat him fairly, like if you have the opportunity, you're doing some dealings with this person and you treat that person fairly, that is love. It is the action you are taking. As we just said, God gives us an example. He bestowed his love upon us. It wasn't about a bunch of emotional, empty talk or rhetoric. It's what he did. How are you treating that person? Whether your personal feelings toward him, for whatever they may be, is irrelevant. When you hear somebody gossiping about this guy, and you know, do you go over and feed into that? Or do you just not partake in it? Or if somebody says, what do you think? Say, well, I don't know where that's true. You know, and you really should stop your damn gossiping. What are you, a woman? You know, that is love. Is the action you're taking. Are you treating this person fairly? Are you being just? God is just. So we are supposed to try to be as like him as we can. Are you being just towards that person? Are you being fair? Are you treating them fairly? You know, are you acting out of love? It has nothing to do with your emotional feeling towards that person. What are you doing towards them? How do you behave towards them? One of the things I think we can take away from this too that I find interesting, before we get off into this a little more, is when you look at this, because John is writing this basically in all three of these letters. You know, obviously, because he's harping on this, he was having a problem with it. You know, well, I mean, he was. He was obviously there was an issue here, or he wouldn't have found it necessary to keep writing to them about this issue. There was obviously problems in this particular congregation. And people were basically, I think it's fair to surmise, they were backstabbing one another. People were cheating one another. There was malicious gossip going on. There was all this backbiting, infighting, problems happening. And he wasn't there, and he was trying to write to him, say, look, y'all are off message. We get a little glimpse of this, by the way. And like I said, I'm kind of getting off. We're gonna reel back in on this here in just a minute. But like I said, you get a glimpse of this if you skip to the third epistle of John and verse 9. There's no chapters. It's short. So it's just verse 9 through 10. And he says this, I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. I tongue-tied a little bit, but roll with me here. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. So you see, it's not real surprise what's going on. You got one guy. You got this one guy, you know, they established congregation. They have to move on. They're moving around, you know, spreading this gospel. And then you got this one guy who manages to weasel himself into some sort of position of authority. And here comes all the trouble. You have one of the founding apostles. You have one of the major founding apostles of the church here. And then what's he dealing with at that time? Some rando. This rando, Diotrephes, who thought he was going to be something. He couldn't stand that somebody else was going to be more important than him. And nobody knows who the hell this guy even is. But at the time, he thought he was so important. He thought he could actually insert himself and make himself more important than John. He was going to be the first in the front of the line. He's going to be the one that determines, okay, no, we're not doing it this way. We're going to do it my way. Very much like Satan can't stand. He wants to be God. He wants to put himself before God. You see, these people wheedle their way in. Time and again, I just thought it was funny. When you get down to it, it's like, man, what's the issue here? And you get down and you read this, and it's like, oh, same kind of crap issues that people deal with today. See, even back then, you had them trying to wheedle in and change the doctrine to make it their personal pet project. Funny because, like I say, nobody knows who this guy even is, but at the time, he obviously thought he was important. So important enough, he wouldn't receive the brethren. He basically didn't want anybody even hearing these letters that John was sending. And nobody knows who this guy is. Guy was caught up in his own self-important, thought he was just all of this, trying to turn the church into his little project and shape it into his own image, and he was nothing. He was a rando. But it just shows it's the issues aren't anything new. You wind up with the same thing. John was dealing with the same stuff that everybody else deals with. You see, the subversion, the attempt to subvert the church started from the beginning. This is something new. I mean, it is new in the fact that it has been allowed to get this bad. And that's a failing on the part of men. Men who were supposed to safeguard and protect the church have failed in doing that over the years. I'm not talking necessarily about, you know, those of you who understand and grasp the truth now that you're a failure. We get beaten enough over the head. We don't need more of it. This is mostly pointed at those who came before. I mean, we get to this point just overnight. It's like somebody getting fat. You know, you see these people on these TV shows. And they like 800 pounds and they're having to hoist them out and they're trying to do all this stuff, you know, to help them. It's like, how do you get there? I mean, at some point in time, you should have like along the road before it got that bad, looked around and been like, whoa, something's up. I need to take action here before this gets so bad. You wake up one day, you're 800 pounds. I mean, you know, you were missing some warning signs along the way. The same way with subversion of the church. You look around at clown church today and yeah, I mean, but that didn't happen overnight. Those who came before, many who came before, whose role it was to protect, safeguard. They wanted to get along. You know, as we talked about previously a couple weeks ago, they started confusing mercy with tolerance, and they started tolerating evil. They started tolerating evil. They started allowing evil and wickedness to come into their midst, and it started spreading, and they failed. And now we wind up with this 800-pound clown church that we have today. It's a shame. Let's see. Let's get back on. Let's get back on point. I'm sitting here flipping as I do. That's what you're hearing in the background. It's me flipping pages. I want to look at 2 John, verse 4. 2 John, verse 4. Again, this short stuff. So there's no chapters here. It's just verse 4. I rejoiced greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth, as we have received a commandment from the Father. Now, in this, he's writing specifically to the elect lady and her children. This is somebody in particular. But so, I mean, not all of the church is going along. He's having to rebuke the churches. He's writing these letters. And obviously, there's some who's given him the word. That's how he's finding out about it. But I picked this voice, this verse here. I rejoiced greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth. Walking in truth. Love. See, this is all connected to his message about loving the brethren. How do you love the brethren? What we're talking about today. How do you love somebody that you maybe don't necessarily particularly like for whatever reason? But how do you show love to them? You're walking in the truth. If you are walking in the truth, the thing is, if you look at our modern world today and you talk about God's love, and we're going to jump to something else here in just a second. But understand this, you could be violated. You have violated, you have broken the law. If I told you, you are a lawbreaker, and you might sit there and say, no, I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about. You are a lawbreaker. Everybody is a lawbreaker when it comes to breaking man's laws in today's clown world. Why? Because there's so many laws on the books and they're so complicated that nobody knows. I mean, you've broken some law that's on the book. Nobody knows that law is there. Nobody's bothered to enforce it, but it's still there. It's like the tax code, you know? Look, the reality is, if they decide to come after you and audit you, they're going to find something, because nobody understands the tax code. You got people that do years of education. That's what they do for a living, is they're CPAs, and all they do is deal with the tax code, and they don't even understand it. They understand enough of it to try to muddle through and get by. But and the only thing that helps them with that is the IRS agents that are enforcing it. They don't understand it either. It's so complicated and muddled, they don't understand. You have to understand this. There's a point here. You're like, what the hell is he on about? There's a point here. You see, God's laws are the opposite of that. It's simple. This stuff is not complicated. I struggle. I've said this before. Sometimes I struggle to do this Christian-specific message every week, week in, week out. You know why? Not because I don't love doing it, not because I don't like talking about these things, but because it's not that complicated. Sometimes I feel like I'm just beating a drum, making something, you know, sound, I don't know, difficult that's not. God specifically has made this not that hard. If you are walking, he says, I rejoice greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth. Look, if you're all twisted up and say, like, I don't know if I'm loving my brothers. I don't know if I'm loving my neighbor. I don't know what I'm doing. Look, if you are walking in truth, you're pretty much good. But what about all of God's commandments? If you are walking in truth, you're pretty much good to go on all of God's commandments. This ain't that hard. He doesn't make it all convoluted and twisted and hard to understand. Look, yes, there are details and there are interesting things to study. And what did the Lord mean by that? But as far as how you live your life, look, if you are walking in truth, you're pretty much good to go, because you're going to be off in this other crap. Getting off into this other garbage requires abandoning the truth and chasing after the lies. As we covered earlier, just chasing after the things, the temporal things, the things that are going to go away of this world, the lies. If you're walking in truth, you're pretty much golden. As we have received a commandment from him, the Father, a commandment from the Father, walk in the truth. It's not that hard. If you're doing that, then you're probably covered everywhere else. And to kind of highlight this, we're going to jump over to the book of Matthew, chapter 22. Jesus gets asked, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? What is the great commandment in the law? And we pick up in verse 37. Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. The first and great commandment, love the Lord. Seek the Lord. Seek his truth. We know that God is truth. When Jesus was asked who he was, way, truth, life, truth, center word, truth. If you're focused, if you love the truth, if you try to stay centered on that, this is the first commandment. Love the Lord. Seek him. Try to put him first in your life. And the second, Jesus didn't leave it at that. He followed up. And the second is like unto it. It's just like it. What's the second? Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And treat other people like you want to be. So you're going to treat yourself fair. You're going to try to not cheat. Who goes around trying to cheat themselves? Don't cheat yourself. And treat other people the same way. You end up just by instinct, treat yourself fairly. Now, you know, so if you're treating yourself fairly, if you treat other people fairly, guess what? You're going to love your neighbor as yourself. And he finishes up with verse 40. Jesus says, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. I think sometimes people just purposely try to make the law and the prophets and the things of God overly complicated. Now, again, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to oversimplify them either, in the sense that there's always context and there's historical context, and there's very interesting things about all of this stuff that you know. I mean, you could spend your life as, for instance, as a biblical scholar, as somebody who studies these things, you know, as an academic. You know, and never run out of material. There's always things, and you can go and understand. And that's all well and good. You know, again, I'm not trying to oversimplify it. But when it comes to you, because look, everyone, y'all all listening, everyone, y'all ain't no academic. Y'all ain't sitting around studying ancient scrolls and understanding the word of God in the historical context. You're mostly just like listening to me and trying to understand how to get through your life day by day. And Jesus says, look, this ain't that hard. The law and the prophets, if you understand these two concepts, treat other people like you want to be, to love your neighbors yourself. In other words, be fair to other people, just like you try to be, you know, you're automatically fair to yourself. You know, treat other people, love your neighbors yourself. Not empty emotionalism. It's about how you treat people. Love the Lord thy God with all your heart. That's the first thing, because if you're doing that, you're going to do the other. If you're seeking God and walking in his truth and trying to be as close to him as possible, the other's just going to happen automatically. But he adds it on here anyway and makes it a point. Love your neighbors as yourself. Look, on these two things, if you're doing these two simple steps, like a life hack, it's your spiritual hack. If you're doing these two things, Jesus is like, look, if you're doing these two things, and he says what? On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. In other words, if you're doing these two things, you know, the rest is just expounding on them. You know, it's just getting into details. If you've got these two things covered, then look, you're on the right track. Simple. You know, I mean, we look at the example. We're going to get ready to wrap up here, but I was just sitting there thinking, you know, you look at the example. Jesus would get into these, these debates, if it were. He would get into these discussions with these people who are supposed to be learned in these areas about, you know, those who came before and what it meant when this prophet said this. He would get into these detailed discussions about these things. But when he spoke to the people, he would break things down to, look, this is what you need to be doing. I mean, it's fine. You go along with these academics, and he could carry his weight with the best of them for obvious reasons. But when he didn't do that when he was discussing things with the crowds. When he'd go among the people, you know, because the people aren't irrelevant. That's the whole point. He would go among the people. He would make it, break this down and make it simple for them. This is how you live your life. And this is, you know, this is what we do here. You know, I'm not an academic. We're not trying to get off into complicated academic studies here about biblical things. What we try to focus with on this story is how you live your life. How do you live your life in walking in the truth in the best way you can to be as close as you can to the Lord so that you live your life the way you should so that God can look at you and say, yeah, you're doing things more or less right. Good job. That's all. When Jesus would speak to the crowds, he tried to break it down. That's why he always used these parables. He wasn't trying to confuse them with the parables. He was trying to make it simple. Look, this is just like when you go do this. You see, when you go tend your flocks, what do? See, God's like that. He would make it simple so they could understand it, so they could live the best lives they can. The common people are important to God. It's not just the academics that are important. Is to give guidance to the common people and tell them, look, this is how you live your life. Because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. As Christian believers, we're trying to live our lives the best we can, the way God wants us to do. That's it. We're not trying to be the smartest guy on the block. We're not trying to be, you know, smarter than the next guy or no more than the next. We're just trying to live our lives the best we can that God wants us to be the best we can that God wants us to be. That's it. That's all we're trying to accomplish. I'm trying to beat and do better than this guy over here or this person over here or show up this person over here. We're just trying to be the best so that God looks at us at the end of this life when we're born into the eternal realm and God looks at us and says, well done. You know, well done. You did well. You didn't give up the race. You didn't quit. You crossed the finish line. Congratulations. Glory to God. That's our goal. That's our goal. It's not that complicated. I love it. I just love that last bit that we read there because Jesus takes all the laws and all the prophets and breaks them down into two simple things. Everything else hangs on these things. If you've got these two things covered, you got everything else covered more than likely. I love that. I love it because he's making it simple. He's making it easy to understand. And that's what we need. We need easy to understand. We don't have time to stop in our day-to-day routine and try to figure out, you know, these little details on what we're supposed to do. If we have two simple ideas, two simple concepts, and we can live our lives, and you can quickly ask yourself, hey, am I living my life in line with these two concepts? And if the answer is yes, then you're probably doing okay. The Lord doesn't make this. Praise God, he doesn't make this stuff complicated. He really doesn't. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of it. I hope you enjoyed today's, or I'm sorry, this week's discussion. I'm glad you joined us for this week. And to always remind everybody, I am on Fridays with Sven for the Daily Nationalist. We try to have a fun, try to wrap up the week with usually a lighthearted discussion. Sometimes it doesn't work out that way. But we do try to have a lighthearted discussion. So if you haven't checked that out, be sure and check it out. It's a lot of fun. And again, thank you for listening this week. Thank you for those of you who have put a little something in the offering plate. It means a lot to me. Really do appreciate it. We're going to get on out of here, and we'll hope to see you next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.